Welcome to Hack the Entrepreneur, the show which reveals the fears, habits, and inner battles behind big-name entrepreneurs and those on their way to joining them. Now here is your host, John Naster.
Hey, welcome back to Hack the Entrepreneur. I'm so glad you decided to join me again today. My name is John Naster, but you can call me Johnny. Today's guest is the author of one of my favorite books of the past year. He's also responsible for more than $500 million in successful business pitches and deals. He's also hilarious and a great conversationalist. He helps people sell companies for a living. He's the director of capital markets for the investment bank Intersection Capital, where he raises tens of millions of dollars from investors and institutions. He's the author of a book called Pitch Anything. I've read this book twice in the past year, and I absolutely recommend it to every single entrepreneur. Because if you can't pitch your ideas, you will never be successful. Now, let's hack Oren Claff. I want to take a minute to thank our awesome sponsor, FreshBooks. Not just for being our amazing sponsor of the show, but also their support is so damn good. I'm trying to get it for my year end to get done to my accountant. And I've realized that I can actually, my expenses from my bank account can be linked directly to my FreshBooks account, and it's all automatically done for me. Amazing, right? But I have a software company, as I've said, but I'm not very technically savvy. So I was doing it completely wrong, but I instantly called them and got on the phone with a real life person who walked me through it in 2 minutes, and it was immediately done. And the report was sent off to my accountant. And I just need to thank them because I may have smashed my computer otherwise, and that would have been a very expensive mistake. Try it absolutely free today at freshbooks.com/hack and join over 5 million users running their businesses hassle-free like I did today. Be sure to enter Hack the Entrepreneur in the How Did You Hear About Us section. Welcome back to Hack the Entrepreneur. We have another amazing guest today. Oren, welcome to the show.
Thanks, John. And for the 3 seconds I've been on, it's been good to be here. But check back in with me in 5 minutes. I'll let you know.
Okay. I'll make a note to do that. All right. Let's jump straight into this. Oren, as an entrepreneur, what is the one thing that you do that you feel has been the biggest contributor to your successes so far?
So probably the reason I'm here is that, I wrote the book Pitch Anything, and in my view, the ability to communicate to investors, customers, buyers, joint venture partners, people who can make my life easier, better, and richer, the ability to communicate to them in the first minute what I have in the first 3 minutes, what the big idea is in the first, within the first 5 minutes, the product and the value proposition, and certainly within 20 minutes, everything, right? Who I am, what the background is, what our transaction or our record is, who believes in us, what the upside is from working with us, what the downside protection is, the value proposition of the product, how it works. Who's on my team and what you get when you work with us, all of that quickly, in a 1 minute version, a 3 minute version, a 5 minute version, and the big one in a 20 minute version. So the ability to pitch the deal clearly with brevity and with entirety has made a huge difference in our ability to get customers, get revenue, get investors.
Impressive. And as I was asking the question, I was like, if he answers anything other than the ability to pitch, I don't know what I'm going to do. Because that's your thing now, right? And it's awesome. But so what about before there was the brand of Pitch Anything? What did you do? Is this always just a thing that you've been able to do? Or have you just had an innate ability to read what your gut tells you to do, to follow, or to, when you were getting started, Let's go back.
Yeah. So when I was getting started, like anybody else out there, what I had to do was juggle kittens, stand on my hand, light my feet on fire, ride a unicycle, you know, do all kinds of things, you know, metaphors to get attention, right? And so those things, you know, juggling kittens, running around on a unicycle with a squeaky horn, the business equivalent of those are discounting, being needy, you know, doing trial closes, offering to provide free service, giving, you know, bending over backwards to service a customer morning, noon, and night on the weekend, right? So all those things I used to have to do in order to attract the customer's attention because I didn't know how to get it correctly by positioning what I had in the way that they think about buying products and services. So if you just want to sort of talk until you magically hit some hot button with the customer by running through your features and your benefits, right? And you just want to continue talking to them, then in order to keep their attention, you have to offer things like discounts, like working extra hard, like guarantees, like, you know, refund periods, taking calls on the weekend. And those are all things that hold the customer's attention because they're getting something for free. So if you don't want to give stuff away for free, then you have to know how to pitch correctly. So before I knew how to pitch correctly, I had to do all those kinds of things that hold the customer's attention because they're getting free stuff.
Fair enough. So every blog post right now, expert is talking about the 80-20 rule. Do what you're good at, delegate the rest. You are the master of the pitch. Oren, what is something that you are absolutely not good at?
Oh, man. Well, we have a couple notebooks with, 66 lines a page of stuff that I'm not good at. And so I just pull those out, scan them and fax them over to you. So, right. I mean, you know, this 80-20 rule, first of all, I think is oversimplistic, yeah. Right? And so when you're Jeff Bezos and you're running Amazon, you can kind of do 80-20 because you have scale, you have big data, and you can really, when you're an entrepreneur, and you've got a one-person, three-person, five-person business, I don't think you can really apply the 80-20 because you have to do everything, right? You have to do accounting. You have, you don't have an accounting firm. So Jeff Bezos can say, I don't put my head in accounting. I hire a CFO. That way I can get out of having to do, accounting and finance, right? But you have a three-person entrepreneurial business, hiring a CFO for $280,000 a year. So I don't think you can really apply 80-20 that well in entrepreneurial, right, endeavors, because you have to do the accounting, you have to do the banking, you have to do the HR, you have to do the logistics, you have to do product development, you have to do, media, you have to do marketing and outreach and hiring and planning, and you have to do, the selling, you have to do customer service, even I have a larger organization, I have to do a bunch of that stuff. So if I just said to myself, right, I'm going to focus on the 20% of things that make a difference and stop doing the 80% of stuff I don't like to do, then what would happen in an entrepreneurial organization like mine would be that a lot of stuff just wouldn't get done. Okay.
Right.
But to be fair to your question, I'm good at a lot of stuff now that I think about it. Cass, over there, I'm looking across the room. What am I not good at?
Keeping it clean.
Oh, yes. Okay. So
you're not good at defining your faults, possibly.
Yeah.
You exactly know what it is that your one thing is. And yes, that's amazing. You've defined it clearly, right? And
yeah. So what I do, we have a whole staff here. They tell me where to go, what to do, when to jump, and how high. What I do is I show up in a room, right, with buyers or investors in a conference room at some, in some random city at the edge of some random freeway across the country. And I walk into that room. I barely know what city I'm in, who's there. And I stare down across the boardroom at some investors or buyers, and I give a 20-minute presentation on the company that I'm representing or the product that I'm representing. So anything that isn't focused on delivering a pitch to buyers or investors, I don't pay attention to. Again, they tell me where to go, what the product is, and I build the pitch and go give the pitch and manage the buyers. That's all I do.
That's awesome. So you do your one thing. And
I do my one thing.
Yeah, that's cool. Okay, so let's move to work. I've read that you say that you have the ability to work 25 hours a day if necessary, and that oftentimes it is necessary. So that means that you work hard, you do a lot of things, you push through a lot of deals for a ton of money, and yet you still have time to write a book, promote the book, do those kinds of things too. So you are productive in some sort of way. Can you, Oren, walk us through, say, the first 30 minutes of a workday and how you set yourself up to do all the things you need to do that day?
Yeah, I can. I mean, my life is a little bit different because my business is pretty well established. So the first 30 minutes, you know, I turn on my email and a deluge of people come in. Hey, I want you. I need you. I love you. You know, I want to come and make love to you. I want you to come and make love to me. You know, we have enormous amount of deal flow that we have to sort out. So the first 30 minutes of the day are really like, oh my God, what are we going to choose to work on? You know, and I have to choose 80 things to say no to and 2 things to say yes. So that's the end goal of 3 or 4 years of entrepreneurial effort. Okay. So first of all, don't write a book, right? Unless you have a lot of money. The book, you know, everybody and his sister and his cat has written a book today. The market is completely saturated. The book that I wrote took a year to write. I took a year off. You know, I had the money to do it. I hired professional, you know, probably 8 people worked alongside me, editors. I had a staff writer from the New York Times work alongside me. So writing a book to get customers, I think I hear a lot of the sensibility today. You should write a book, and that is your calling card. Most of the books that I've seen written to do that end up at number 978,000 on Amazon. That's not a good ranking, right? So it's enormous effort and it's expensive and time consuming to write a real book. So I don't recommend that. You know, I much prefer people publish a blog, you know, or do some video blogging or something on their subject. Writing a book is not a great direction for building business development. So I would say that first 30 minutes of the day for me, you know, while I was building the business is really, what are all the things that look like priorities? And then burning that down to 3 things that have to get done. And then having that discipline on those 3 things and saying no to the other stuff. That is, you know, the discipline of everything seems doable. And you get to the end of the day and almost nothing gets done. It's the discipline of choosing through 3 things that are actual priorities, right?
Right. And so now you have a substantial business and you wake up and you have 100 emails, 80 of them are things to say no to. And the other ones you have to decide whether they're deals you should act on or things you should act on. What is like a process you go through? Like what is something or a deal or something that you bring into your business now and decide that this is something that I'm going to act on? Obviously, it's going to be different than when you started because you have the time, you have the means to do a lot more things. But is there a process you sort of go through to do that? Or what intrigues you about a deal even? Just something like that.
Sure. So if an entrepreneur was going to bring this, so now we sort of shift in my day job, which is finding companies that we can put money into or that investors can put their money into, right? And so when we look at a deal and we say, what's an entrepreneurial effort that deserves to get cash or capital from an outsider like us, an investment bank or from a private equity group or from a venture group? Right. And so if you're an entrepreneur, it is a highly stress relieving to start your business with some working capital that's not your own, right? Because then you can make decisions that aren't based on, you know, the end of the day, the end of the week, making rent, making payroll. And so raising capital is awesome for, you know, almost every business from Microsoft on through Facebook, on through Google has raised money so they don't have to scramble day by day, week by week to run their business. So when we think of a business that can raise money and find an investor, first of all, we look to the management, right? And so does management look like somebody, you said, you know, you read a quote from me that said, you know, some days I have to work 25 hours and that often happens. So I look at the entrepreneur and I say, is this a guy that quits when he's done, right? So some people quit when they're tired. And we look at an entrepreneur and we say, is this a guy who quits when he's done versus, you know, somebody just gets tired easily and stops? Obviously, nobody can work 25 hours a day, 3 days in a row. But if you're preparing for a product release, if you're going to a convention to speak, if you're doing something major, is this an entrepreneur that can power through? The second question is this somebody that has relevant experience? Or are they starting everything from new? Obviously, if you're starting an app company that, you know, is a game for shooting down birds, you know, a lot of people don't have relevant experience in apps that where you shoot down a bird. But if you look at that company, Rovio, you know, that was their 254th game. right? So is this something that the entrepreneur has relevant experience in? Does he have connections? And then we do a gut check. Is this a growing market, right? So, you know, if somebody said, hey, I've got a new kind of pet rock as a joke, we would say, I don't know if that makes sense, you know, to go into the pet rock market because it's not a growing market and there isn't, you know, a ton of consumer demand. It's not saying that would be a good or bad company, but is this a growth market? So what are growth markets? I mean, obviously, things that reduce the cost in healthcare, anything that helps consumers focus on energy savings, anything related to a drone, right? Anything related to a drone that can, you know, create pizza, that can deliver pizza. You know, fountain pens is not a growth market, right? Publishing a newspaper or a print magazine is not a growth market. So is the product or the idea in a growth market? Do they have an anchor customer? Is there somebody out there in the world that says, if this product exists, I would buy it? Or if this product does exist, I'm willing to buy it and commit to it. And is that anchor customer, you know, a good reference customer? Has the entrepreneur put some of their own money in and some of their time that they take in risk, right? That's, you know, really, for me, entrepreneurialism is synonymous with risk. If you're not willing to risk with your time and money, why should I risk on you with my money, right, is generally the question. So those are some things we look for. I don't know if that sparks any additional questions in you, yeah. But those are things that we look for and something that would be likely to get an investment.
Okay. And so the first part was a founder or owner, entrepreneur, whatever you want to call him, who doesn't quit. Or quits when he's done, not quits when he's tired or quits when he's been told no too many times. How, without experience behind him of a company that's been acquired already and he's kind of taken to IPO or something, how do you know that? What is it, your gut, or how do you define that owner? Is it just sitting down with them and being like, this person, because I've told them no already 10 times and they still keep hounding me?
Well, so, okay. So a couple of things, lots, good question. There's lots of topics in there. Yeah. When you get a no, right? It's a no, right? And so hounding somebody, I think very rarely converts a no to a yes. And if it does, that yes doesn't feel sustainable.
Right.
So this is why I believe it's so important to spend an investor time preparing a pitch that is convincing. So you walk in once, you give that pitch, you push for an answer, and the answer you get, because you've described everything and it's clear what you have, what the value proposition is, what the economics are, you know, what the product is, how it works, you know, all of that, that when you get a yes or a no, it's a yes or a no, and you can move on cleanly, right? When you've given an inefficient pitch, then there's a sense you have to hound somebody because you didn't have time to tell them everything. You're still trying to answer some of their questions. So you have, when you feel like you want to go back and hound somebody, it's because you feel like you haven't told them everything. You forgot, right? You forgot to tell them something. When you come away from a presentation feeling like you forgot to say something, then you've got an incomplete pitch. You haven't prepared for it well enough. You haven't covered the big idea, what the problem is in the world, how things are changing, right? What the trends are, what your solution is within that change in those trends. Again, your value proposition, how it works, and the product features and benefits, you know, and who you are, your background, your track record, and what the economics are, the cost, right? So if you leave any of those components out, you get an incomplete pitch. Now you feel like you got to go back, give people more information, and you're hounding them. So it should be one and done,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So that's that part of the question. Sorry, I went Mach 5 with my hair on fire down that rabbit hole. What was the other part of the question?
Well, I have another question that was referring back to what you were talking about, which is when you're looking at a deal or a company or an entrepreneur is worth making a deal with.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
But say when you say, is this what they're in? Is it a growth market? Is it drones or is it fountain pens? But where does that growth market to you? Is there a number where that, like, they have a product or a beta product, and now I see that in 3 years, this market can be this size. Is there a size, like a market size that has to go to for you to intrigue you, to draw you in and make it worth your time? Or is there not like a market sort of cap or something that needs to be there?
Yeah, that's a great question. I mean, it's really technical. Look, you can have a $5 million company in a $100 million market. That's a great little company, right? So the answer is no. I mean, it relates to the scale of the investment, but you can't raise $100 million for a industry that looks like it's going to be $100 million in 5 years.
Right.
You know, what would that be? So giving a good example, it's probably a growth industry because people are getting more into coffee, but those little friggin' drip flasks, what are they called?
Those K-cups?
Yeah. So look at like the company Chemex, right? Probably a $20 million company. They make little pour over cups. It's cool. Right. The little filters, you know, maybe they're $30 million. You know, they couldn't go out and say, hey, this is going to be a $4 billion industry, drip pour over coffee for San Francisco, you know, hipsters who are too good to go to Starbucks or Pete's, right? You know, that's probably a $150 million market worldwide. They're a $30 million company. They have 30% of the market. They couldn't go out and make the claim that we need $100 million because it's not going to be a $4 billion market in 2 years, 3 years, okay? So I think it's relative in size. So could you go out and raise $1 million to start or continue growing a company in a $100 million market where that market feels like it's expanding? Yeah. Could you go out and raise $30 million to be, you know, to get a third of a market that's $100 million, you know, $150 million? I think that's a tough case to make. So it's relative in size, right? But I don't think that also, you know, the other thing is what kind of investor you go to. So venture groups clearly want to put $5, $10 million into companies that are going to be in billion-dollar markets. But there's all kinds of investors that aren't interested in those kind of companies that want to be players in multi-billion-dollar markets. There's lots of investors, if you said, hey, the market for Moleskine kind of journals has been growing year over year for, you know, the last 20 years because of hipsters in San Francisco and in Chicago and Boston, and it's kind of caught on. And it went from a $20 million market to a $50 million market last year. But globally, we think, you know, high quality paper in journals and the accoutrement like pens that goes with it is going to be a $200 million market 10 years from now, right? There's lots of, you know, that's not a billion-dollar market. It's not extremely high growth, but there's lots of investors that go, eh, that's not bad. You know, and if your company is a suitable scale for that market, then it works. But I will go, John, I will go back to your other question of when we look at an entrepreneur, you know, if they haven't taken something public, if they haven't been in a company that's been acquired, if they haven't been, you know, in a company that's had an exit, or there's some sort of proof of life that they're an entrepreneur, it's not necessarily bad. What we look for is what they're doing in their current idea. And do they have some experience or background or deep passion in it? Right. So sometimes you see somebody working on a healthcare deal. They've only been in accounting, they've been in manufacturing, but either they or someone in their family has gotten sick, right? And that's driven them to ground or the internet to like research that illness of, you know, every day, 10 hours a day for a year, until they found some solution. Now they're passionate about executing a healthcare model, and that solution that would fit, right, our entrepreneurial profile, even if they had no medical background, no biotech, no molecular biology, because they're passionate and about solving this problem, and they've taken risk and time and done their own work. So the more typical is, hey, I was a ball bearing engineer for 20 years, right? I now know that there is software that can predict the failure or success of a batch of ball bearings, you know, using big data and manufacturing data, and I'm leaving to start a company to write that software, you know, that would be an entrepreneur that would make sense to us, even if he'd never run a company before.
Fair enough. I like that. It's, and I didn't mean to push it maybe so far, but it's so interesting to hear it from the other side of the table, right? It's usually the entrepreneurs trying to get financed or funded, and we're not sure why we're not.
Yeah. Do you have a use case of somebody who's trying to get financed and is not able to that I could give a perspective on, or you tell me?
Not so much. I mean, the company I own went through where for about 3 months of dealing, this is where I was introduced to your book and I made the pitch. I did all that and it was all kind of agreed to verbally. And then it had to get just approved by CEO, blah, 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 blah. Numbers were all agreed to. And then they just called and it was just off. No reason, just it's done. And it was like, whoa, interesting. And this happened to me like early December. It was like off. And I was like,
okay. So yeah, so let's talk about that, right? So for me, if I just look at it as an outsider, that situation, we see that all the time.
Right.
The goal of a financing process is to start with a pitch that attracts lots and lots of different kinds of investors: venture capital, private equity, angels, super angels, crazy rich guys, banks, right? And so you've got a nice melting pot of people with different motivations, people with different timelines, different ability to invest capital. And the pitch attracts all those kinds of guys. And then you start to season them, right? And so what, and probably what happened to you, and what will invariably happen, is one of those investors says, John, we're in. We want to do it. Let's go, right? And you go, wow, that was easy. You know, we went out with a pitch. We found an investor. Now we're going to start a closing process. The difference between you and me is when that investor goes, hey, Oren, we like the pitch. We like what what we heard. We're in. We want to start closing. I would say, sit down. Nobody's closing anything right now. All you have to do is remain interested, ask questions, come to the next meeting. And I would continue to season a group of investors, okay, and not choose any one guy and rush down the road to try and close, because you need to get to the closing table with options. So what you could have done if you had had options, right, you could have put pressure on the investing group to do things like, you know, committed LOI, a breakup fee, commitment fee, hire legal, and you would have more, you know, forcing them to spend money or commit to you would give you more visibility into their intent to close, right? So I bet in that, you know, if I was in that deal, the one that you talked about, I could have sort of sussed out their intent to close much earlier. And the way you combat that is you say, hey, look, if you're not going to, you know, bring a law firm to the table that you've engaged with and sign a binding term sheet that specifies the terms, then we're going to continue moving with one of our other investors. Right. And so to the degree you have options, you don't get stuck with somebody at the last minute retrading or just bowing out of a deal.
Right. And I mean, we didn't even know. That's why I guess I really was trying to get insight into what makes you a viable company, because we didn't even think of ourselves as viable. We were just going at it ourselves, bootstrapping it, making some money. And then they approached us and they have the means and they have a market that could have been amazing for us as well. And it was like, whoa, interesting. Right. So then we just stuck with them because we weren't even looking for this. But now it's opened my eyes to the fact that, wow, we actually are viable in that way. And maybe we don't have to bootstrap it quite so hard. We could actually have some money to make decisions based on what's best for the product and the business rather than what we can afford right now.
Yes.
So that's why I was pushing you so hard, because I was trying to figure that out for myself. I was being selfish. Sorry.
Yeah, no, it's good. So when a company approaches you, you know, you're at an entrepreneurial effort, you've got some revenue and employees, and you're doing something exciting, a company approaches you, say, hey, we'd like to buy you, we'd like to invest in you, right? My recommendation is, again, not to go down the road with a single company.
Right.
Because what they will do is they will lock you up, spend a lot of your time, a lot of your money, and then once you are overcommitted, they'll start to change the terms, right? And then eventually those terms will reach a level that you don't feel like you'd want to do a transaction at, and then the transaction dies. And now you've spent time and money and effort and you have nothing for it. So what I recommend is when a company says, hey, we want to invest in you, then you start a process where you look around for other companies like them, right? And if you've watched any of the shows, The Bachelor, it's exactly that, right? So, you know, either if it's on the women's side or the men's side, you have 27 option women that you start with, right? And, you know, the first one that says, oh, I love you, you don't run off and get married, because you don't know enough, right? And so you run a process and you go from 27 down to 15, down to 12, down to 7, down to 3, down to 2. And then you make a selection. You feel like you know a lot about that selection. It's seasoned. And a lot of times, you know, maybe you wouldn't have picked that person on day one, right? You would have picked the person that was more, you know, high profile or more chasing you more aggressively. But through a winnowing process or a discipline process, you find the person that's perfect for you. And at the end, it's a natural selection. It doesn't feel like there's any risk and you go for it. So running process, I think, is incredibly important.
Yeah. And I'm not even going to just guess that you're absolutely right, because I know that you are, because it sounded like you were listening into some of our conversations, the way you said what they would do during that process. And we just sat there, I guess, just hoping, right? Holding our breath that this is the one that will marry us. And then it was completely wrong. And I can see that now. But it was also our first one. So I guess we just have to get up to the bat again.
Yeah. So find, you know, there's in the financial markets are so large that you know, if there's one investor, there's another 10 that wants the same deal. It's your job to go out and find them, run process on those 10, get down to five, you know, say no to five, get down to five, get down to three, get to the closing table with options. So when one group starts giving you static feedback, retrading, whatever it is, you can say, hey, listen, we're not going to put up with that because we have somebody else to close with. You behave like that, you're gone. We'll go with somebody else. That's very difficult to say if you don't have another option, right? That's when you allow people to treat you badly.
Exactly. Yeah. All right. So, Oren, let's wrap up with success in the future. You've done some amazing things. You've have methods that have closed like $400 million in deals at this point, and you run a great company that also does these transactions. So if your career by some crazy bad event was to end today, would you be happy with the legacy at this point that you've got to leave?
Yeah. So that's a great question. I mean, if you'd asked me that 5 years ago, I would have said, oh man, you know, I've done a lot of deals, but I'm not sure anybody remembers me. So now I've written the book. We have the Pitch Anything. It's just one of the highest selling business books. It's published in China. It's published in Japan, in Russia, Romania, Germany, France, England, you know, certainly the US. And so that is a fantastic legacy. We have pitchanything.com. We're launching a show called The Trigger Man. Definitely recommend. You know, if you'd like some of the things we said here, go to pitchanything.com. Sign up on the list and you'll get the announcement when The Trigger Man is launching. You get to hear these kinds of conversations, if you care about them, every week and get some insight on how deals are done.
Excellent. Yeah. And I agree that you should be happy because you have your book is it's talked about. I heard about it. I was actually in the Philippines last March and people were just going off about this book. And I got it on my Kindle before I even got home and it came in really useful, except I guess I didn't. I still didn't close the deal, but I got the whole story, the framing and the story and telling the story and getting people engaged at that point.
Yeah. Well, now that you had a time at bat and you've read the book and the next time you're going to get up and you know exactly what to do and you're going to bring it home. I feel confident of that.
Exactly. Awesome. Oren, thank you so much for taking the time to join us.
Great. Thanks.
I truly appreciate it.
Okay. Talk to you next time.
Oren, thank you so much. That was a lot of fun. And ever since last March, again, when I was in the Philippines at that conference, I was introduced to your book by a good friend of mine now named Gideon. And it's an amazing book. It really has helped me in a lot of ways. Just making the pitch isn't just selling a business or buying a business. The pitch is really, the way Oren explains it, is really anything. It's like finding a partner for to make a partnership or a new joint venture partner to do something in your business or anything that is going to help you grow your business. You need to pitch that idea to somebody. And if you follow the way Oren ties it in to story and just, you have to read the book. I've made a special link if you wish to grab it. Hacktheentrepreneur.com/pitch will take you right there. And yeah, I strongly, strongly suggest you check it out. Because Oren said a lot of smart things. Right? He did. He really, I mean, he's funny. He's personable, conversational. I love it. And he says a lot of smart things. But he said one thing. He said one thing. Did you get it? Let's do it. Let's find the hack.
So I look at an entrepreneur and I say, is this a guy that quits when he's done? Right? So some people quit when they're tired. And we look at an entrepreneur and we say, is this a guy who quits when he's done?
And that's the hack.
Oren, yes. Thank you. Thank you. Exactly. And this isn't just for if you want to get your company bought again. This is just this. The reason why somebody would invest in you, if you do not quit when you're tired, you quit when you're done, is because that's what it takes to succeed. It absolutely does. And there's no way to get better at something than to continually do it. I read a quote from a trainer who has trained numerous world-class Olympic athletes. And he was asked, what is the trait that you see amongst these athletes? Do you see some correlation? He says, yes, these people who succeed at this utmost level, the main trait they have is that they can deal with and work through boredom better than anyone else. When everyone else gets bored and tired of training or tired
of getting better at what it is they do, these people continue to go. They do not quit when they're tired. They quit when they're done. This is absolutely it. If you want to get good at podcasting, if you want to get good at writing, if you want to build a business and leave the legacy that you want to leave behind, you cannot quit when you're tired. You can only quit when you're done, and do not stop before that. Because one thing, Oren will never, he'll never invest in your company because he knows it won't succeed. He knows it won't succeed because you will quit when you get knocked down one too many times, but not when you're done. Oren, thank you. That is just amazing stuff. And it's just really, it's a, just a powerful, powerful mindset shift that you need to make if you're going to get into this game of entrepreneurism and business, because you're going to get knocked down. You're going to get punched and beaten up by things that don't go your way. And you can't quit when you're tired. You just absolutely can't. Oren, that's good. It's just, thank you so much for taking the time to join me. And thank you so much for that hack, because that is powerful, powerful stuff. HackTheEntrepreneur.com is the website. Please check it out if you haven't yet. And also, iTunes review, 2 minutes. It will take you literally 2 minutes from right now. HackTheEntrepreneur.com/iTunes will take you right to my iTunes page. I have 250 something five-star reviews. They're absolutely amazing to read. And I would love, love, love to have one from you. Just 2 minutes is all it takes, and it will help me so, so much. And if you can, drop in your Twitter name. You're at your name, so I can come on Twitter and say thank you, because I can't do that through iTunes. But I would truly appreciate it. If you aren't on an iPhone, which lots of people are not, hacktheentrepreneur.com/Stitcher will take you right to Stitcher, which is the app you may or should use if you are not on the Apple iPhone. And Stitcher, you can leave me a review there, and it helps, helps, helps so much. And it also takes 2 minutes. This has been a lot of fun, guys. As always, I thank you so much for taking the time to join me. And until next time, please keep hacking the entrepreneur.